Hey guys!
And welcome to Spilling the Crime, a true crime podcast hosted by...
me, Umberto Mello.
And me, Jonas Grancha. Join us in this big adventure where we will be talking about crimes with a tipsy twist.
How this crime happened, I want to know. What the fuck is the unwrapped chocolate?
Her name is Sharma Melngelings. Magmar? Magmar meningitis? What?
Where's the dick, Lorena? Where is the dick?
Oh!
What is this?
Are those your enemies? Are they after me too? Do you ever feel like a plastic bag?
What the fuck?
And then he masturbated on the carpet.
Dangerous questions.
Why?
We did not agree with this. Carlos said that.
Don't compare. Like, what? Don't copyright us.
Don't copyright us. Yes, please don't block us.
So grab your glass, because the spilling is about to begin.
Hey Paige.
Hey Sam.
What you doing?
Not taking pictures of my feet.
Why not?
I don't know, I need money.
Me too. I mean, other than not making money off of feet pictures, what are we doing?
Making a podcast.
Ooh, what's it called?
M Cubed.
Yay.
Murder, mystery, and mayhem.
That sounds pretty badass, not gonna lie. The ad that you heard at the beginning of this episode is from our friends at Spilling the Crime.
They are hilarious.
They are. Like, you can't go through an episode without laughing your ass off. Like, you just can't.
But, I mean, they still tell the stories like, really well, too.
They do.
I love their, like, mid-break ads, too.
They're perfect.
They're so good.
They're perfect. Yeah. So you should definitely go give them a listen and enjoy them, especially after this episode. Go do that.
Mm-hmm. Definitely. Hey, and follow them on Instagram and Twitter.
Why should they follow them on Instagram?
Because it's lit.
So Paige,
what you got for us today?
Oh no, we're not there yet. I need to, I don't know, stall a little longer. We got any news?
Patreon. We'll be here in less than a month.
Yes, August 1st.
August 1st, not the 7th.
Not the 7th.
But the 1st.
You're going to confuse the shit out of everybody. It's going to be great.
So I figured out what's on August 7th.
What's on August 7th?
My cousin's baby's birthday party.
Oh, nice. Mm-hmm. So you knew something had to do.
Yeah, something was on the 7th.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't know. I thought you were just losing your mind, that's all.
Oh, I'm definitely doing that, yes. 100%.
Being a mom does that too. We are also going to do a giveaway and tell them how to get entered in for this giveaway.
Okay, to participate.
To participate, yeah.
You just have to go to our Instagram. Mm-hmm. Of course, follow us first, guys.
Come on. Yeah.
And you'll find the post with our sticker on it. Just like, share, and comment.
Mm-hmm.
Comment
what your favorite phrase from our dumbassery.
Hey, that works.
What's your favorite M cubed moment?
All the times that Sam says penis.
Tiny dick man. Yeah. Anyway, do that, and there is gonna be 5 winners, and we will announce the winners on Wednesday, July 20th. So 2 weeks away. Yay. What else? Oh.
Tajay.
Oh, yes. Tajay Baker. Listen, I'm so excited about this. And I don't know why there's not more news outlets talking about it, because Tajay's mom's a badass.
Yes.
Like, straight up badass.
She found her daughter.
She found her fucking daughter, and no one is talking about it.
No one. We found one news article.
Yeah. One. I don't understand. But anyway, so she is, well, I'm not entirely sure where she is. I know that she is safe.
With her mom.
With her mom. But when she was found at a bus stop by somebody calling her mom, I think. right?
Yeah, the bus driver did.
Oh, okay.
Mm-hmm. He recognized her and called.
Nice. Mm-hmm. So she went and got her daughter, and she had marks and things on her wrists and on her ankles?
Ankles, yeah. Ankles and wrists.
So she's in a safer place now. She's going to have to deal with whatever the fuck she had to endure the last month and a half or two. But I'm glad she's back with her mom.
Yeah.
I hope she's able to finish that last semester of schooling, because she only had like one semester left.
Yeah.
I hope these assholes didn't ruin that for her too.
Me too.
What else? Okay. Well, I'm going to share some of my dumbassery with you because I'm going to make a fool of myself no matter what.
Before the heavy shit.
Before the heavy shit. I need some stupidity. So my daughter is 11 and she is, you know, she's just sassy as fuck.
She's hilarious.
The eye rolls, the fucking aggressive, just talking back. And I just kind of shake her. I mean, obviously I don't. She would like people to believe that sometimes. Anyway, so we were in the car and we were going to swimming or something. I don't know. We were going somewhere in the van. And she starts freaking out because one of the smaller boys, not sure which one, going into the van trying to get up when the other boy pushed the button for the door to close. Mm-hmm. She freaks out. She's like, no, 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 no. And so I go over and I just grab the door and I like pull it. And I was like, it's not that bad. It's like, it's not going to kill him. Like, he will not like it when it happens, but if something happens like this, like, it's not life or death. So, me being the dumbass that I am, I wanted to prove a point. And so, I pushed the button to close it and I put my arm in.
And it shut on that. It shut on your arm?
Okay, so it went further than I thought it would, to be honest. But then it opened back up automatically. And then
Yeah, you got a gnarly bruise on your arm.
Yeah, I may take a picture of it and post it. This is like 4 days later. But I also have like blood clotting disorders, so.
That is true.
It does
that
make it look true. Worse. Like, I have a bruise on my shoulder and I don't know where that came from. It's probably just me walking into the wall or something.
She was worried about her brother.
She was. And I was just explaining. Like, she didn't have to freak out. All she had to do was like, she was in the middle of the van. Like, in the walkway between the two seats, she could have just reached over and pushed the button and it would open back up. Like, that's all she had to do. Instead of going, no, 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 no.
Because when you're under pressure,
it closes so slowly. So slowly. Yeah. So then, so my husband's been laughing at me on that for a few days now.
Yeah, you got a big old bruise.
I do have a big bruise. I haven't told her what it's from yet. I'll die before I do.
I'm telling her.
Don't do it. It's a trap. So, and then, I think this was a couple of days before the van incident. She had been super sassy and, like, just constant with the eye rolling and stuff. And it was driving me insane. So I talked to her multiple times. I'm like, listen, how you speak matters. Like, the words you're using, I understand you just want the best for whatever, but like, how you say them does not construe the meaning. So we've had many conversations about that, like, daily. It's fantastic. But anyway, she comes into the room, like, we were all getting ready for bed. She comes in the room. Brian says something to her, and she just starts to stomp off, and all I said was, hey, what did I say earlier? I know. And then she walks off. Brian goes, what did you say earlier? I was like, I don't fucking know at this point. So now all I have to do is say, hey, you know what I said? And then, like, she just walks off. Yeah, that's my stupidity for the for the day. I needed to share that with somebody, because I'm not sharing it with her.
I'm glad you still have your arm.
Me too. It hurts a little bit, I'm not gonna lie. Like, it's not pretty. There's a little bruise on this side, but it's, like, my arm's a little darker on that side, so it's a little more difficult to see. Also, the veins are on the outside of the arm as prevalent.
Just to prove your kid wrong.
Yep.
About lost arm.
Yep. That would have fucking sucked. So this van door was slowly closing, just, yeah. I put my arm in there, and I'm like, okay, stop, and it just moved my arm. I'm like, fuck. It's like, I can move it. Well, I was like, no, I'm going to prove a fucking point. I'm going to do it. Yeah, that's what happened. I might post a picture later. We'll see.
Oh my gosh.
You guys know what this episode is, because we talked about it last episode. But if this happens to be the first episode you listen to, I'm sorry. I'm going to start off with saying all the triggers, because I'm not going to lie, I'm not really sure which triggers I need to put on this one. Because this is going to be like 4 or 5 parts, just so you know.
I'm not looking forward to it.
No, you need to drink more.
That's my cue. Sip, sip.
No, this story was requested by my sister-in-law, and I love her. Yeah. As I was reading through it, I was like, what the fuck have you done? What the fuck have you requested? Because I knew the Picton case, and I was like, it won't be that.
Right.
Holy fuck. It's fucking insane. I got the majority of my information from this book called On the Farm by Stevie Cameron. If you want to know more about every single individual that was ever involved in this case, buy that book. It's the best. It is very detailed. And it legitimately talks about every individual that was close to any of the Pictons. And it talks about the Pictons. And it talks about the farm. And it talks about early life. All of it. It's just fucking, it's rough. So, like I said, this is about Robert William Picton. And he liked to go by the name Willie. So you know how I am with all my banter about tiny dicks. This one's fun. It's fun. Anyway, if you've not heard of this man, he's not a man. I'm not entirely sure what you would call him. What is the correct
evil,
term?
Pure evil.
Yeah.
Demon in human form.
Yeah, because he's not a person. It's not the correct term. Because he was a horrible, horrible individual. Anywho, let's get into the shit show.
Yeah. Fine, if I must.
You're in it now, bitch. So, to give you a full picture of what it was like for old Willie Boy as a child, because I like that lead up. I like knowing the background and then moving forward. Just know his entire family. Maybe his sister's not that bad, but, like, she wasn't really involved in the farm at all. The majority of his family was just fucking terrible.
And where is this case at again?
Oh, Canada. In Port Coquitlam. Port Coquitlam.
Okay.
So, his father, his name was Leonard Picton. He was one of 4 children. His family was the one that owned the original farm. Like, it passed down from Leonard's family to Leonard and then to the boys. He was described as a lazy and unambitious person as he grew up.
Leonard?
Mm-hmm. Okay. He met Louise, which is Willie's mother, at a coffee shop, and they seemed to hit it off. My problem with this is she was 16 years younger than him.
How old was she?
I don't know how old they were when they met. Like, it gets a little fuzzy in there.
But you know that she's 16 years younger?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know when they met. I don't know the year they met, but...
So I didn't know if maybe she was 16 and he was...
16 years older than that.
Right.
Yeah, no,
32.
I don't know. Eventually, they got married and all that jazz. Louise started working on the farm and all of that shit.
Now, when you say farm, what's on the farm?
I'm getting there.
Oh.
Eventually, their oldest daughter, Linda, was born in 1948. And then, old Willie Boy came along on October 24th, 1949. And then, 1 year later, David was born in 1950. So, like I said, Leonard eventually inherited the farm, and his unambitious self did not know how to maintain the upkeep of the property. They began raising pigs for slaughter. They had a few dairy cows, and honestly, I think they had, like, chickens and some other fucking animals, too. So, the farm was in Port Coquitlam in Canada. And so these boys, actually all 3 children, they had to work on the farm, which would be normal for any farm kid. Unfortunately for them, and again, feel bad for the kid, not the fucking individual they become. They had to clean, feed, or whatever they had to do on the farm for all the pigs and stuff before school. They would come home right after school and do the same thing. And they would do it, I think, 1 more time later in the evening. They never got to be actual kids. They just constantly worked. But also, sounds like a typical farm kid to me, for the most part. Like, they had to help with the animals and everything that was going on. The problem, though, was that for the kids, they would only shower, like, once a week. Mm. Or bathe. There was no shower. So, obviously, going to school, they were relentlessly picked on by all of the kids in the area.
Why would they only bathe once a month? Or once a week?
Because Louise just wouldn't put forth the effort. And wouldn't be a problem had they not been just, like, working with farm animals. I mean, they wouldn't be as stinky.
Yeah. I mean, that's hard work. So, muck installs and feeding chickens and pigs and all that. Yeah.
Yeah. So they were bullied relentlessly by these snot-nosed kids that went to their school. Speaking of snot-nosed kids, though, there was one person that was interviewed who was a classmate. She was a doctor's kid. And so they lived on a pretty decent sized, they lived on a pretty big, decent sized farm. And like there was one side of the farm, there was like this massive hill, like rolling hills. It was just beautiful. And they eventually, by they, I mean the city, eventually created an asylum. And so they had to have doctors that worked there. So they built them 6 houses, like on the hill there. Does like this beautiful land, and then you turn around and you see the Picton farm was essentially a mud pit. Their pigs and things that they had, they killed all the grass. They uprooted most of the trees. Like, all they had were these tiny little fucking shrubs that pigs apparently just didn't want to deal with. So they just left those alone. Then the home itself was just kind of run down because they didn't do any upkeep to it. They had several barns. Mm-hmm. But they were in such bad disrepair that, like, nobody really knew that there was... Like, if you just walked in there, you would think, wow, this place is condemned. But it wasn't.
So when they worked on the farm, like, what all did they do? They just fed the animals?
I have no idea. They did everything. Anything that you have to do with any animal, specifically pigs, they had to...
But they didn't take care of the land.
Right.
Or the shelters. Right. For the animals. Mm-hmm. They just did the bare minimum?
Pretty much.
Okay.
Like, they fed them and they made sure they had water and stuff like that. Otherwise, they just let them roam free. And by roam free, I mean, even they were allowed to go into the house and shit everywhere.
Uh-uh.
I swear. The cows, the pigs, the chickens, like...
Went into the house.
Went into the house.
See?
They were free range.
Yeah, I'd say that's free range.
Anyway, I'm getting off track.
Can you imagine waking up and a hen just, like, laid an egg on your face?
No, I feel like that would be very uncomfortable.
Could happen for your age.
But, okay, so they let the animals go in and out of the house and shit all over the place, but they weren't the quickest at picking them up, like, cleaning it up. So, the inside of the house smelled just as bad as the pigsty and everything. It was just gross.
What?
Yeah.
So there was cow pies everywhere?
There were cow pies everywhere.
Pudding.
So imagine this, if you will.
And I don't
if you
want won't, to.
Fuck you. There's this beautiful estate with the asylum and like 6 different houses. You look around, there's beautiful fucking trees ever. It's like a fucking forest. And then you look down the hill at the sprawling land, and then at the end of the hill, there's a farm. But instead of seeing the span of green fields to feed the animals that would be on said farm, it's dirt and mud. No trees, just that. So this is what these doctors had to just deal with.
Oh.
It was terrible.
So terrible.
So terrible.
Woe is them.
The stench. Just fucking terrible. It lingered on the fucking kids, and it just made everything so much worse.
What's his name off of Charlie Brown? Pigpen.
Yeah, I imagine he smelled similar. So like I said earlier, they were bullied relentlessly. Dave was actually called Piggy. Fun fact, his father was also called Piggy. He was younger, so it's like a rite of passage with them, I guess. But they were, these kids were relentless with their verbal attacks. In the book that I mentioned earlier, he found an interview with a woman that was a classmate of the Pictons. She was a doctor's daughter. She admitted that they were relentless with their verbal attacks on the children for their stench. Dave had a speech impediment, and old Willie Boy was shy, so he didn't speak. This kid And I quote this from the book because I want to see what your reaction is to the statement. So the woman goes on to say, "I remember all of us on the road taunting him. We'd say to each other, just let us at him now and we'll make him talk. How are they different? Dirty and stinky. They always had their hair cut in a brush cut. Man, they stunk. Their house was a poor house with no yard, falling down fences. There were no big trees, only some shrubs. I don't even remember them at school, but I do remember them waiting on the school bus. Our bunch was mostly all doctor's kids. We were the best dressed and had the nicest houses. Almost everyone in the group is successful now."
Do you want me to puke? I'm about to throw up in my mouth.
She sounds like the biggest cunt.
Snot crotch. Like, what the fuck?
I mean, I get that he did what he did as an adult, but at this point, she's just an asshole.
Yes.
Every single one of those motherfuckers were assholes.
Ooh, I'm a doctor's kid. Who the fuck cares?
Yeah. It just pissed me off. Like, as I was reading that, I was like, what the fuck is wrong with this bitch? Cool, cool, cool. They were the poor kids. I was like, I was the poor kid.
Yep.
I don't think I ever got actual haircuts from a salon or anything other than hand-me-downs until maybe high school. And that was only because my sister's clothing didn't fit me.
Yeah.
That was the only reason. But I don't look back at that and think, oh, poor, pitiful me or anything like that. It was just part of life.
Yeah. No, I mean, I remember getting bullied and stuff like that, and it sucks.
Mm-hmm.
Because you're poor.
Yeah. And I was that shy kid. Like, I wouldn't talk to anybody. It was great.
Oh, yeah. Same.
Great. Those were loud-ass bitches here. So we have the three kids here living in squalor, treated as outcasts, and given little in life, including, like, the love of a mother. There was no maternal instinct on this woman's part. None. She made sure they were fed, and that was pretty much it. So, we're going to talk about Willie just a little bit. As a young child. Like I said, he was a very quiet, shy kid. And he did not do very well in school. He had to be held back in the first grade, and he was eventually put into the special education classes and remained in them until he got to the eighth grade, which he quit. He quit school at that point.
Yeah. I kind of figured.
I'm out.
Right.
Side note here, because you know how I love my side notes. When he was around 12 or 13, Hovey Willie Boy went to an auction with his parents. They did that, like, every Saturday to get the livestock that they needed to fill orders. Because, again, another little side note within a side note, they had their own little business, I think at this point, where they would sell the meat and stuff like that.
I don't know that I would buy meat from them.
A lot of fucking people did. Anyway, so he went to this auction with his family, or his parents, and he bought this calf with the money he had saved, and he spent about $35 on it. He later described this black and white calf as pretty as the day is long. He loved this calf so much. He actually looked forward to taking care of it before and after school. So one day, he comes home searching for this little calf, and he couldn't find it anywhere.
Don't tell me.
You wanna plug your ears?
Sam, don't you tell me that. Don't say the words that are about to come out of your mouth.
I will use his words, because why not? Also, the way he speaks reminds me of Letterkenny, and it cracks me the fuck up.
Oh, don't you bring a little Letterkenny into this.
I love that show. It's
me too.
Ridiculous and makes me happy. But anyway, so just imagine the way they speak as I speak, because I will not do that. I will butcher everything. Anyway. So I went everywhere looking for this here calf, and I couldn't find it anywheres. One of his parents finally told him to go look into the barn. He excitedly ran to the barn, but when he got to the barn, he swung the doors open, and I quote, "And here I seen the calf hanging upside down there. They butchered my calf on me." Oh boy, I was mad. I couldn't talk to anybody for three or four days. I locked everybody out of my own mind. I didn't want to talk to anybody. So, to make up for this, I'm going to call it indiscretion with the calf, his mother attempted to give him $20 for the calf, but he said no. No, I was going to keep that calf for the rest of my life, and now it's gone. He loved to tell that story to people, apparently.
Yeah, it's fucked up.
Oh, no, it is fucked up. But, like, he ended up getting a pen pal later while he was in prison. And this pen pal ended up, like, sharing the letters or whatever. But he talked a lot about everything. It was just, he's so full of himself. Anyway.
I mean, you have to think about it. That calf was his best friend.
Oh, I know.
Literally his best friend.
I know.
Everybody does not like him. They make fun of him. He had to buy his best friend.
Mm-hmm.
And then they just slaughter.
So it turns out that Willie wasn't a complete asshole the entire time he was alive. He was actually a decent kid at times. And I say this because he made such a positive impression on a 5-year-old little girl around this time that his calf had died, that they became really good friends later on in life. And you'll hear more about her later on. Her name is Lisa Yields. Her father was white and her mother was Chinese, and she was being raised by her Chinese grandfather at the time that she met Willie. And so apparently her grandfather would take her to the store that the Pictons sold their meat.
Mm-hmm.
And during one of these trips, Willie gave her a whole ass bag of hot dogs, and she was just like, she just thought that was the nicest thing, because apparently in this area, if you were different in any way, your life was hell.
So since she was mixed race.
Mm-hmm. Apparently during this time, though, the Picton parents were making a pretty decent amount of money. I mean, they had their little homestead there with all the pigs and everything, but the city wanted to create a highway. And for this highway that they were planning on, it would cut into their property. And so they wanted the Pictons out. So the Pictons moved. I think the city actually bought some of the land or whatever. They bought 40 acres of land in a rural area of Port Coquitlam. But they didn't want to build buildings like the house and the barns and everything from the ground up, because that would just be too much. So they dismantled the majority of the buildings on the property, their original homestead, and brought those bitches over to the new. And they built their house out of scraps of everything else. They had a couple of barns put up, you know, all of that. It was already in disarray, so like, I cannot imagine being like, you know, it'd be a good idea. Let's get this broken down house over here. Pull that bitch apart. Let's take her over here and live in it. Makes no sense.
Free wood.
I guess. It's just an interesting decision all in itself. So as they were moving, Linda, the oldest kid, she took this opportunity to demand to live in Vancouver rather than living with her parents. I don't blame her. Not one bit. But it worked out. So her mom let her move in with some relatives that were living in Vancouver. And apparently her mom felt like the farm life was not suitable for ladies. I'm like, that is interesting since you are also a lady. And you live there. But I digress. So at this farm, at this time, they had about 700 pigs and hundreds of chickens.
They had 700 pigs?
700 pigs. But you have to remember, they bought them constantly at auctions, and then they would butcher them, and they would sell the meat and stuff. So it was just a constant rotation of livestock.
Do you know how dirty pigs are?
Yeah, please don't add your fun facts, Cindy.
They are disgusting. I could not imagine having 700 pigs that they are not taking care of.
They're not cleaning up after them. They're letting them, again, run through the fucking house and shit everywhere.
Normally when you have pigs, well, okay, I can't say for Canada because I don't know, but I know in Tennessee, whenever you have pigs, you also have rats. And not these little itty bitty rats, big ass fat rats.
I learned that from Charlotte's Web.
Yes. And they are scary. The size of these rats are scary.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Yeah.
I couldn't imagine having 700 pigs.
No. I can't. I'm too lazy for a fucking farm. I feel like I have a farm and I just have like 4 kids and 2 cats. And that's enough
for
me.
You do have to herd them.
I do.
So what else do they have besides the 700 pigs? I missed that.
And hundreds of chickens.
Okay.
So I'm trying to stick with a timeline because I like the linear thought there. But it's very difficult because in the book, like I said, I got the majority of the information from the On the Farm book by Stevie Cameron. It's so detailed. And then he like skips back and forth between like one event to the next. But there was so much shit happening all the time. It was just insanity. But anyway, I wanted to point out that Willie was not the only shithead of the group. And this portion of the story deserves a trigger warning because it involves the death of a teen. So if you don't want to listen to that, skip ahead a little bit.
But I mean, honestly, if that's going to bother you,
you probably shouldn't listen to any of the Willie Picton episodes.
That is bad.
But I did want to throw that out there because, like, we try to avoid death of minors.
Yes.
For the most part. And like, they sneak in every once in a while. But anyway.
That poor calf.
At this time, Dave was 16. He just got his driver's license. And he pretty much had free rein to do whatever the fuck he wanted as long as he got his chores done. So he would get in one of their one-ton trucks that they used for the farm. And they would take the fuck and he would take the fuck off. And he did just that on October 17th, 1967. He was on his way back to the farm, and the road was Dominion Road. I don't talk about all the other property that they eventually owned, but Dominion is like the main one. But anyway, he was heading back home around 7-ish, where, unfortunately, there was a 14-year-old boy named Tim Barrett who was walking with the traffic on this road just after visiting a friend's house. Like, he was just hanging out. Yeah, building little airplanes. So it's not very clear what actually happened, but Dave hit him with this one-ton truck. In the book, it seems like he stopped long enough to see what he hit, and then he booked it back home.
So he saw it was a person.
He saw it was a person. He goes home. He's really frantic. He has a massive dent in the truck. There's blood on it. And he talks to his parents, and his parents were very helpful.
I was about to say that word.
So they looked at it and they made a plan. Dave was to go to the mechanic who worked on all of their shit and get the headlight or turn signal or something that was broken on it replaced and to paint that area. But first they had to clean off the blood. So they did that. Once they get the truck clean enough, he goes straight to the mechanic. He tells the mechanic that like they were building or working on a barn and a pole hit the truck. And that's what caused the dent. The mechanic was like, that doesn't seem right, but okay. Because at this time, he didn't know.
Right.
So he fixes it, gets it back to the Pictons really quickly. And while Dave was off getting the truck fixed, Louise, his mother, went out onto the road to see if she could find who or what he hit. And she did. She found Tim Barrett laying in the road. She then dragged him over and dumped him into, like, this little culvert. It was like a ditch, had a little bit of water at the bottom, and then she went back home. It was like the next day, I think it was, that they found Tim's body. The mechanic heard, and the mechanic's like, that was suspicious. He calls law enforcement, like, as soon as he hears, and he's like, listen, I'd rather be safe than sorry. Like, if they didn't have anything to do with it, awesome, but if they did, somebody needs to know. It's like the best, this guy, he's the most respondent person ever. In the rest of the story, it doesn't happen like this. Anyway, so law enforcement goes out and checks out the truck, looks at the farm, all the shit. Turns out, they didn't believe the story either. So they determined that he was the one that was responsible. And they had to do an autopsy on Tim. And again, if you don't want to listen to this, like, skip 15 seconds or so. The coroner's report said that the injuries he received from the impact of the truck wouldn't have killed him. It was the water in the ditch that Louise had rolled him into. So, on December 19th, 1967, Dave Pictin was placed on an indefinite probation and his license was suspended until he was 21.
So, he did a hit and run.
And
so
he got slapped on the wrist.
But they know that Louise did that? No. They
don't know. It was a rumor that was circling around, but they couldn't confirm it. Mm-hmm. Nobody saw it.
So Louise didn't get in any trouble.
No.
And he just got a slap on the wrist.
Mm-hmm.
Even though he hit somebody,
mm-hmm.
ran,
mm-hmm.
and they died.
Mm-hmm.
And he tried to cover it up.
Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, I don't understand this part at all. Like, it makes zero sense. So like you pointed out, there were no charges brought on Louise for her part in the incident, though it remained a consistent rumor, and even Willie spoke about it to his friend Lisa Yields years later. So around the age of 14, old Willie boy dropped out of school. Louise didn't give two fucks because that meant he could help more on the farm. But she wanted him to be more familiar with the butchering process, because they could take care of the pigs all day long, but they needed somebody with some type of expertise to deal with the butchering so they could like streamline that process. So she forced him to work with a butcher under an apprenticeship, and he did that for a very long time. At this time, Louise was in charge of every aspect of the business. She would hire the farmhands to help do whatever jobs needed to be done. She would make room in the house for said farmlands. Fucking was the farmlands.
Deep inside my womb.
So she would make room in the house. Like, imagine a two-story house with a basement that is utterly filthy. Now imagine that room, that whole ass house having just beds thrown everywhere. And that's where the fucking people would sleep. That would drive me absolutely insane.
Wake up with a pig gnawing on your ear.
Pretty much. But there could be anywhere from a few extra farmhands to a few dozen. So by 1973, Leonard, Willie's father, was senile. He didn't really know who anybody was, and so everything was left to Louise to dole out. Another random little side note, because I am the way that I am. When Dave was 22, he had a 16-year-old girlfriend named Sandy, who eventually started living on the farm with Dave. And
when she was 16?
When she was 16. She went from this normal, nice, suburban, little, not filthy house to absolute filth.
I bet you she was trying to get back at her parents.
Probably. But within a year, she was pregnant.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And they had their first child. And then shortly after that, she had their second child. Now, anybody that was living in the Picton home, Louise made them fucking work. This 16, well, I think at 17, 18, she had two kids. And she worked from sunrise, well, before sunrise, to way after sunset. Louise would hire babysitters to come and take care of the kids for her. But she had to fucking work.
Why wouldn't she just hire another farmhand and then let her watch her own kids?
That would be smart, but I don't know. I don't know. It just sounds like hell. So even with having to take care of, by this time they're all older, they're adults at this point, even with the hundreds of pigs and cows and chickens and whatever the fuck else they had, Dave and Willie still worked other jobs to help bring in money. So Willie decided to quit the butchering business for a little while and began working part-time while also working on the farm for the British Columbia Electric. Yeah, there's so much. Dave worked in construction and demolition. He eventually began a business supplying local farmers and builders with topsoil from the farm. He cut every fucking corner there ever was, though.
Oh, yeah.
It was disgusting. So he eventually went into business with his girlfriend, Sandy's brother, and the business was called D&S Bulldozing for Dave and Sigmund. So at some point in 1974, Willie decided to visit this woman he had been pen pals with for a while. This woman's name was Connie, and she lived in Pontiac, Michigan.
So he had pen pals with... Mm-hmm. People before he went to prison,
yeah.
Too?
Okay. Yeah. He really likes to talk to people, apparently. He doesn't want to verbally speak to them. He wants to write to them. So he takes this 6-week-long adventure, working his way to visit her. So he'd pick up random odd jobs so he'd have a place to stay, and then he would move on, find another odd job, whatever.
So he came into the States?
Mm-hmm. Ugh. Yeah, he was allowed in the States. His brother was not, because of the hit and run. His brother was not allowed, but he would use Willie's ID later on and go back and forth over the border.
Yeah.
Anyway, so during this time, we also find out that he is a racist piece of shit. Yeah.
Willie?
Yeah.
Why? Is she black?
No. at one point he stops in Chicago and later tells his pen pal from prison that you have to watch out for those black people.
He's the one that you have to watch out for.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
Oh my God. Okay.
So he also tells this far-fetched story about being asked to be a male model, which cracks me up because, ew. Just, he's gross. He's so gross.
Well, it's like catfishing, kind of, you know? In these letters, he can be whoever the hell he wants to be.
Yeah, but at this point, when he's talking to the pen pal from prison, everybody's already seen his fucking picture. Being a nasty son of a bitch. Okay, so later on, one of his surviving victims looks at him and later recalls thinking, it's Bozo the Clown. That there's no better way to describe him.
Oh, Lord.
Yeah. Anyway, so he finally gets to her, and by the time he leaves, because he has to get back to that farm, he decides that they are engaged.
He decides?
He decides.
Did he ask her?
I don't know. It's very unclear. I would say he probably did, and she probably tried to find a nice way to turn him down because he's a creepy-ass man who probably still smelled because he had only showered a handful of times in his entire life, and at this point he's 20-something, so that's just gross. That sounds like somebody broke something. That's good times.
I think it's funny, you hear a crash and then little feet, like, running away.
I didn't do it.
That's perfect. I was kind of hoping that you were going to say that the girl from Michigan was actually a dude.
That would have been great, but that was not true. She did, however, stay at her home instead of going back with him to his farm. So she dodged a real big bullet there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I was hoping she was a catfish.
Yeah, that would have been nice.
How did he find her to rot her?
I have no idea. It didn't specify, but it was probably one of those fucking newspapers, little sections looking for pen pals or whatever. Because that used to exist.
That's really creepy.
Yeah. Actually, we need to do an episode on that. But, so after he returns home, he quits his apprenticeship with the butcher. He decided he wanted to work on the farm full time. But get this. Had he stayed another 6 months, he literally could have gone anywhere as a actual butcher. Anywhere. He could have left the fucking farm and just
Peaced out.
He could have gotten away from his abrasive mother and the filthy farm life. But he decided he wanted to go work at the farm full time. While working there, he wanted to contribute more income to the farm, like his brother had. So he decided to start breeding horses. Between 1977 and 1979, there was a lot of turmoil in the Picton family. A lot. So in 77, Linda, the sister, married a man in Vancouver, and she stayed away from the farm life. In 1978, Leonard was diagnosed with cancer and died shortly after. Sandy and Dave, who never married, were having issues because he was a sleazy asshat who wanted to bang anything that had a vagina.
Yeah.
Sandy left with the two kids, which was probably the best thing that ever happened
to him. God, yeah.
But Dave didn't give two fucks about her leaving. It just meant that he could go fuck some more. But Willie was in love with Sandy.
Oh my gosh.
And he was distraught by the fact that she had the audacity to leave. Shortly after this, one of the barns burned down that held like 600 pigs.
Sounds like Willie has a, what's it called, an attachment disorder?
Oh, absolutely does. In 1979, Louise got sick, like her husband, diagnosed with cancer.
Wait, how many pigs died?
600.
600 of the 700 pigs died?
They had much more than that at this point.
Oh my God.
I'm thinking they had like 1,500 or some shit like that at this point in the farm. But like when the barn burned, they couldn't save the pigs. Which I'm sure Louise actually probably wanted to try because that meant money.
So what happened to Louise? I'm sorry.
She found out that she had cancer, died in April of 1979. I just want to point out that she was 67 when she died, and Leonard was 91 when he died.
And they only died, what, a year apart?
Yeah. Being the shrewd businesswoman that Louise was, she had a will. And she left everything to her three children. Dave and Linda were to be given a lump sum payment of $20,000. But old Willie boy, he wouldn't be allowed to get any money from the estate unless he remained on the farm until he was 40 years old.
Why?
Because I think he was the one that would, other than his sister, obviously, the one that would be more likely to leave.
Let him leave.
Yeah. He got real pissed off about this. Yeah, no shit. He was super bitter for quite a while. But Dave, being the disgusting ladies' man that he was, he had another woman in the home. Her name was Vicky. And soon after she moved in, her sisters began visiting regularly. I don't know why I keep bringing Dave back. Well, actually, I do. He's a sleazeball. I need you to know that this family is fucked. Like, just absolute fucked. So they would come out and they would play on the Picton farm, on the parts that weren't completely ruined by their carelessness. Willie was apparently nice to the two girls, letting them ride the horses he was raising. And one of them later recalls not liking going around him because he wanted to teach them how to make sausage with a meat grinder in his scary, dark basement bedroom.
Yeah, that sounds kind of sketch.
Mm-hmm. So, as the Picton boys were more in control of the farm, like, Linda had her stakes in it. Like, she was a businesswoman as well. Like, she ended up being a real estate agent. She made sure that she was getting something out of it.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, the farm began to be more disarray. I don't know how that's even possible because it was already fucking terrible to begin with. Dave's topsoil business was taken off, which led to more good soil being removed. And then also, if there was a project that the city was working on that needed bad soil removed and then good soil placed down, he would do that for them. But what he would do is he would get the bad soil, mix it in with the good soil, and just give it back to them.
Yeah.
Yeah. Also, at this time, Willie decided that he was going to start going to auctions, not only for the livestock that he would need to keep up his livestock business, where he would butcher and sell the animals and everything, but he would also buy random cars, and apparently he was like a whiz with all the vehicle bullshit.
All the vehicle
bullshit. Yeah.
So he would flip cars.
Yeah. Or he would just strip them and he would sell the parts, or he would just fuck with them. I know I've mentioned this a couple of times, but when he would go to the auctions for the livestock that he would need to fill orders, because for some reason people still bought their shit from them, the auction house would keep the less desirable animals for him, like the ones that were sick or defective in some way. He didn't give two shits about the health of the animal, which I would assume would turn into like the taste or texture or something with the meat. But just ick. I love the look you're giving me right now.
Because obviously, never mind. Just keep going. I mean, he sells all kind of meat, so.
He does eventually. So in the beginning of the 80s, he began working with a butcher so he could have his nice streamlined business, you know. He would get the animals, they would butcher it. The butcher would actually help cut up the bits of meat into pieces that the people actually wanted to eat. Because he apparently was not very good at the precise cutting. He was better at the whole, like, hanging them up, doing the before the meat is what it is. Anyway.
like skinning it and getting it ready?
Yeah. I'm sorry. He makes me so uncomfortable. So once he was done, they were done butchering the meat, he would end up taking some of Dave's heavy machinery, digging big-ass holes, dumping whatever byproducts that he was not going to use, and then covering that big-ass hole back up.
Why?
Because that was his way of getting rid of any trash.
Why didn't he just feed it back to the pigs?
I don't know. Because the majority of it was bones and stuff, so like...
Pigs will fucking eat anything.
I'm sure they will, but I don't know. He just did it. By this time, Dave was like, fuck the farm life. I'm moving over to the demolition of buildings and shit. That's a direct quote, obviously. and he was the biggest ball sack there ever was. He wanted to be part of the Hell's Angels so bad. He just couldn't. He never quite made it there. He was just their friend. And they would use the fuck out of him. they just used him all the time. So the only reason I bring this up is because apparently, and I don't know if I knew this before, but the local police were actually focused on the Picton farm for quite a while in the 80s. Because the Hell's Angels were using them as a chop shop.
Oh, yeah.
So they would go steal some shit, bring it, and mix it in with, like, the shit cars that Willie had all over the fucking place. Or would bury it, or, like, whatever. Like, so Dave put Willie in charge of essentially taking care of these cars. Hiding them in plain sight, essentially. Or fucking burying them. But since he had his business going on in the farm between the livestock and the horses and his little side gig of fucking around with vehicles, needed help.
I can barely keep my house clean, much less do all this bullshit that they're doing. Like, what the hell?
They didn't worry about the house being clean.
That is true.
That saves a lot of fucking time in the day.
So anyway, he's doing too much.
He's doing so much. They're always doing so much. And they're always cutting corners in some way. It's fucking mind-boggling. So, he needed help with the chopping of the shopping here. I need to bring some laughs in it at some point. So, he ended up getting teens to come work on the farm and then also go steal shit. Because, why not? He was so helpful that way. He would be like, you know, you're having a hard time. Come... You can stay at our house. You can work on the farm. He wouldn't fucking pay them.
I was about to say, would he give them, like, a chicken or something?
Oh, he would give them... some of them described getting some really gross meat from him. So then they stopped taking meat from him. And this is, like, mid-80s, so I do believe this is when he started his rampage. But we don't know that for sure yet at this time. The reason they got caught with the chop shop is because they had hired, and I don't know if it was them or the Hell's Angels or whatever, but there was a politician's son that got wrapped up in it, and he got caught stealing a car, and he told them exactly what they needed to know.
Snitches get stitches.
So then the cops come to the property, and Willie rolls over, and he's like, oh yeah. This is where they are. And he took them around the property and showed them the various places that they were fucking buried. Dave got in trouble for that one, obviously. They were like, we know who's in charge.
Yeah.
We know. But then the boys were like, we never dealt with Dave. It was only Willie.
So then what happened?
Dave got arrested. He got in trouble. But he got arrested, but it was like a slap on the wrist again. They had bigger fish to fry because during this time there was another serial killer that was going around. This man, his name was Clifford Olson. He specifically targeted children. And I'm not going to go into detail on that one. There is an insane number of serial killers in Canada at this time. It's astounding.
In the 80s?
Yeah.
Yeah, there's, I mean...
Specifically, like, in this specific area, there was Willie, there was Clifford Olson, there was another guy that was targeting sex workers, and there was another one. There's so many.
Yeah, Evil put in, dropped some statistics.
Yeah, I know.
About how many were active then and how many are active now, and I did not need to know that.
Nope.
At all.
Nope.
Thanks for sharing, Cordy.
We love you. And they were like, okay, cool. You just don't go into the U.S. And we're good.
Did Willie get in trouble?
Mm-mm.
Not at all?
Mm-mm. No, because Dave was the one that was in charge. Willie kept doing his butchering shit, and he eventually found a place in Vancouver, a reduction company is what it was called, that he would take his waste. Rather than burying it, he put it in these big old drums, and then he would take it to Vancouver. It's weird. Like, the process of this whole thing is weird. So, the farmers, the restaurant owners, or whatever, would take their oils or byproducts from butchering to this place, and then they would dump it into this massive vat, and it would separate the oils and any of the chunks, and then each part of that would be sent to another location, and then it would be sent out to, like, the fat and the oils and stuff like that would be used and cosmetics and soaps and paints and things like that.
Yeah.
The meat, the feathers, the bones, all of that stuff that was left over after the liquid was gone away was turned into ground meal. And that was used for food for livestock, food for pets, and
right.
all sorts of fun stuff. Fun fact, and remember this later on, this company shipped all over, not just in Canada.
Yum. I wasn't alive in the 80s, so that's yeah. okay.
Enough of the technical bullshit. He was still really quiet. I think this was mid-80s. But he was still very timid around Dave. And he also worked real hard at his fucking side hustles that never seemed to end. And he would add shit and then he would whatever. I don't know if at this time he was still breeding horses, but he was still doing all the other shit. Any hardworking individual tries to find things to help them relax when they have some downtime.
Drugs.
No. He never did any drugs. He never drank.
Lies.
When he was on the prowl, when he went to his... about in a second, but he went to these welfare hotels that had bars in them, and he would sip on some soda while he would buy alcohol and drugs for everybody around him, and that's how he chose his people that he eventually abducted. His form of rewarding himself for such hard work was to go to Vancouver's downtown east side, which is where many of the sex workers, addicts, and homeless can be found. He'd cruise around, get a blowjob here and there, or more.
You said that way too casually. Get a blowjob here and there.
Or more, like he sometimes went further. But you could smell this motherfucker from a mile away, and I can't imagine money or drugs being enough to have my nose anywhere near him.
Oh, God. That was a hard flinch, man.
That was great.
Because you know he probably wasn't circumcised.
No, that was gross. I don't want to know. I don't even care. And did you know that there was a rumor that he couldn't even get it up? I need that rumor to circulate again.
But you know, when you pull, there's probably crusty shit.
Oh my God, there. I hate you so much. Stop.
His big old bush probably had, like...
So, as I said earlier about the... in the grass
flying off
screen,
of it.
Oh, God. Stop. Stop. Nope.
Ooh, from under cheese. So Smegma. Much from under cheese.
So, again, I'm sorry to keep switching back and forth between Dave and Willie, but they are some colossal douches. You know, large enough to cleanse a whale's vagina. But anyway, I feel it's important.
They probably smell like a whale's vagina.
After 11 years of dating Vicky.
Oh, Dave, I forgot about Vicky.
Yeah, I know. I can't believe he ever found somebody that wanted to be with him. It's mind-boggling. She left. She's like, fuck you. And then he somehow managed to move in another woman named Kathy. She was described as a bright, funny woman. But she was also the single parent of two children.
And dating Dave, so I don't know.
And dating Dave.
Don't know how bright.
And lived on the farm. Eventually, Dave decided to be more manly and fully immerse himself into the biker lifestyle. Specifically, he ended up being associated with the Hells Angels, but he was, again, too much of a ballsack to actually become a Hells Angel.
Was he ever a prospect?
No. No.
He didn't even get to be a prospect.
Again, they used this motherfucker.
That's funny.
Because they knew how much... he wanted to be a part.
So have you ever seen Joe Dirt?
Yeah.
You know, there's Joe, and you know that dude that is always like, fuck you, Joe. Mm-hmm. Like, my car's better than yours, blah, blah, blah. Mm-hmm. Always trying to be Billy Badass.
That's Dave.
Yes.
Absolutely, 1,000%. Like, he treated Willie like shit, which is why Willie was very docile around him, which is really odd, considering the shit that he does.
Yeah.
But he's the tiniest of dick men, and he's not going to go up against somebody that could potentially be stronger than him.
It just makes you also wonder, but what else happened in that house when all those workers were there?
It's a good question. I don't know.
How many of them workers accidentally went missing or whatever?
Yeah.
Because there's probably like hundreds. Not hundreds, but you know.
Oh, no, a lot of people went through that.
Just going in, yep. Going out, going in. I mean, Were they all accounted for?
I don't know.
It just makes me think that he saw it somewhere first before he started doing it.
He may have. I don't know. He really just liked to get the women super fucked up on heroin or cocaine. Mm-hmm. And then he would do what he did to them. I'll go into more detail on that later. In like episode 4 or 3. I don't know how many episodes there's going to be. Because this is really fucking long as it is. But anyway, so Dave wanting to immerse himself into the badass biker lifestyle, he would throw these enormous parties. Like, they would have the full-ass pig roast shit. What?
I'm reading dirty biker books right now. So I was literally just reading about a fucking biker party, so... Anyway, sorry, keep going.
That's fun. Anyway, so I need to, after this, I'm binging like 15 smut books so I can get the rest of this shit out of my head. Anyway, so during these parties, Dave knew that Willie didn't want anyone in his room. He had his space and he wanted, it was the basement. That was his area. He'd get real pissed off if anybody was in there. Willie tried to talk to Dave about this to try to get his friends to stop, but Dave didn't give two fucks. In fact, Dave took his girlfriend and another friend to Willie's room specifically. I'm going to describe this room for you. So they walk in. There's a disgusting mattress laying on the floor. Don't get me wrong. My mattress is currently on the floor because I'm too lazy to clean under it. Like, I'm not going to move that bitch to clean under it. But that's beside the point. My mattress isn't disgusting. This friend talks about the stain of, like, where he would sleep. Not like he would piss the bed, but, like, his disgusting aura is essentially what it was.
Like an India and a stain.
Yes! And I know it's not funny, it's gross, I just can't. Oh, anyway. There was a set of 3 coats of arm, you know, the thing showing how, distinguished the Pictons were, to be like, oh, we came from this family line and whatever. He also had a horse's head on the wall.
What?
Yes. So he had this, when he first began breeding horses, he got this really beautiful colt out of it. And it, like, is the very first one. And he named it Goldie, and he loved this horse, but something happened, and, like, he broke a leg or something, and he had to be put down. So then, he decided to take it to a taxidermist, and he mounted the horse's head on the wall. Yeah. So, I bring this up only because, like, when Willie walks in and he sees these 3 people standing there, he gets pissed. Absolutely pissed. He gets up in Dave's girlfriend's face, and he yells at them about, if she ever comes into this room again, I will kill you. So, he's got some anger issues, obviously. And then, one night later... This friend, I don't know why I'm not naming her because, like, her name was in the book. I don't know. Anyway, he got pissed one night and he threw a glass of milk in this friend's face. And she kept coming back. So because these fuckheads get away with every fucking thing that they do. Trigger warning here, talking about some sexual assault. Dave, being the big old douche canoe that he is, at one of his excavation jobs... He sexually assaulted a woman who was working as a flag girl, and she reported this to the police. But while waiting for the court to actually do anything, his biker friends started harassing her. He got away with it again.
Of fucking course.
He was hit with a fine of $1,000, and he was put on probation. That was it. This poor woman had to move to another fucking city because she was terrified of them. I just, can we just stop letting assholes get away with this shit? If they are accused of sexual assault, don't get me wrong, I get that people like fucking Amber Heard are gonna be like, oh, he did this and they didn't actually do it. But let's believe the ones that are actually telling the truth. There has to be a way to find out. Do a little bit of digging. And if you're not sure, talk to somebody else. Like, I don't, anyway. In 89 or 90, one of the babysitters that they used for Kathy's children ended up moving from the farm... But then nobody was ever able to contact her again. And she didn't contact anyone else again either.
Uh-oh.
This friend, she ended up reporting it to, I I think the woman's daughter. Been like, I've not seen her around. Have you? No, I haven't. So the daughter called the police, but nothing was ever done about it.
Of course not.
Yeah. So you remember how I talked about there was a serial killer that was targeting sex workers? Mm-hmm. His name was Gilbert Paul Jordan. And I may end up having to do a whole ass episode about him. But it took law enforcement 23 years to get this shit bag under control. And he was... And then he was only convicted of one count of manslaughter, and he served only 6 years in prison. And I don't understand. Like, these episodes should just be like, Vancouver PD fucked up so hard. I'm pretty sure, and by pretty sure I mean I'm positive, that Willie was active in this time. Where he was abducting sex workers and they just disappeared.
Well, yeah, it was either the Hell's Angels that made her disappear,
mm-hmm.
or Willie had already begun.
Yeah. So, like, between 1987 and 1989, there were 30 sex workers that were found murdered in one manner or another. So there was a task force that was actually brought together to look at the manner of death to figure out what was going on. And so they brought in some highly intelligent, badass profilers. And one of them, his name was Kim Rosmo. He was a geographical profiler. And so he and like six other people got together. They went through all of the missing, or all the deaths, actually. And they figured out from looking at it, they cut some aside because they were kind of outliers. But they figured out there was at least one serial killer, but they were most likely looking at two or more.
Wow.
So they were stoked. They were so excited that they had this information, and they were like, we've got this profile. You guys can, like, nail some son of a bitches.
Right.
They hold this meeting with a bunch of the investigators and the higher-ups and everything, and they're like, hey, look, we've got this. We know there's something going on. You know what those motherfuckers did? Not a damn thing. Not a damn thing. Nothing. They could have saved some fucking lives. They could have saved lots of fucking lives. But no. They wanted to have their heads straight up their asses and not see a fucking thing.
Well, who were the main victims?
They were sex workers.
Yes, I didn't care.
And a lot of them were raised on reservations, and then they would eventually move to Vancouver and then end up on the downtown east side. And a lot of them weren't white. They were people of color. And sex workers. And a lot of times they also had some type of addiction. So they had like three strikes going. Actually, you know what? They were women. So that's four strikes against right. them. So that's not so one fucking person cared. I say not one person. There were certain people that cared.
Yeah.
And they tried. But there was only so much that one person could do when everybody that's higher up said, no, we don't have this problem. This is a theme. Throughout the entire fucking story. To the very end. But anyway, get back to the tiny little dick man at hand. So, by the mid-90s, he had this friendship with Lisa Yields, the little girl that he ended up giving hot dogs to when they were younger. And yeah. She just thought the world of him. They somehow managed to, like, live near each other. And she didn't realize that was him until they started talking. But anyway... They ended up becoming, like, inseparable for a while. He would take care of her. If she needed money, she got money. If she needed food, he would help her with that. He took her to auctions and other places that he would buy stuff. And he thought he was so clever in switching the tags. So, like, if he wanted something that was, like, $90, he would switch it with something that was, like, $20. So, that's a general thing. Also, Lisa was the only person... that could look at Willie and be like, listen, you're getting smelly. Go take a bath. And he wouldn't get pissed about it. But they never had, like, a sexual relationship. It was...
attachment disorder.
Yeah. Eventually, Dave's girlfriend, I'm not entirely sure which one at this point, because he switches them so frequently. She decided she didn't like Willie being around because he gave her the creeps. Like, he was a creepy motherfucker. She didn't want him around. So...
And Dave isn't?
I don't know. Their standards are, like, super low. I don't know. So, he kicked Willie out of the house. So, Willie made his little bedroom in the barn. he like put some blankets on top of some freezers and he slept there.
Will he just let him kick him out of the house?
Yeah. Again, docile as fuck. He did this for like a month or so until Dave decided to buy or steal or some motor homes for his job sites that he had because things kept coming up missing. So he's like, I'm going to buy these and then I'm going to have somebody stay on the job site. That way they can keep an eye on things. He was nice enough to let Willie stay in one. Also, because this confused the fuck out of me when I was reading the book, I need to share with you. Apparently in 1994, there was a woman that moved in with Willie in this tiny ass, like, camper van. It's like, in, and then, like, there's two beds on either side, and that's pretty much it. There wasn't a whole lot. She stayed for 18 months with him. She claims that there was never any sexual relationship. She just worked for him every once in a while. Like, she would clean up the camper. She later described this period of time like living with an uncle. But during this time, he was absolutely 1,010% murdering women. He was. But she says she knew nothing of it.
Okay.
She says that she only knew him as a friend who would help her if she needed it.
First off, where do these women come from?
That's a good question. Like, some of them are previous sex workers or are sex workers that somehow managed to get around the Pictons. And he happens to like them, I guess. And so he'll buy drugs for them and beer and liquor, whatever. And he won't touch them at all. Which makes no sense because I don't know how he was picking and choosing these women. Because, again, Lisa Yields, she was half Asian.
She was bullied like he was bullied?
And she, maybe that's what it is. There was a kindred spirit there or something. But then, a lot of his later victims were, like I said, people of color. It makes no sense. I don't know. So he had, there was numerous women, like a plethora of women in and out of this house. They would come in, they would live with him, they would clean up the house or whatever, they would make him food. He would buy them drugs, and they lived peacefully. He took advantage of Dave needing somebody to be at the job sites. So he would take his little camper van, and he would park at the job sites. And a lot of them happened to be in Vancouver, because it's where, like, a bigger city, there's going to be more hustle and bustle and things being demolished and shit. So he decided he's going to park his ass there. But this helped him in two ways. One, he didn't have to commute from Vancouver to Port Coquitlam. Two, he was able to stroll the downtown east side for women. At this time, he gained a reputation as a typical easy John. He'd roll up, they'd agree on whatever act and whatever payment. They would do said act, and then he would fucking leave. And he would always pay them. He would go to, like I said, the welfare hotels, where there's usually a bar attached. And he would be really friendly to everybody, and he would buy them drinks, and he would buy them whatever, like, he would give them money and say, hey, go get a fix and come back.
He never got that when he was a kid. Everybody always made fun of him.
That's true.
So now he's got money and things that people want.
And he has
want.
A shit ton of money.
So now he has friends.
Yeah. And like I said before, when he was at these hotels or whatever and dealing with people in general, he wouldn't drink. Like, at these parties that Dave would throw that would be, like, insane, he would not drink. He wouldn't partake in any drugs. He would just drink on his whatever soda, and then he would just supply everybody else with the stuff in it.
Gatsby.
I mentioned Linda, the sister, being a smart businesswoman earlier. She ended up negotiating in 1994 the sale of the north end of the farm, a big chunk of the farm, for real estate purposes or whatever. This was sold for $1.7 million.
Nice.
In 1995, two more portions of the farm were sold for $1.1 million, and the other section was $2.3
million. Sweet.
So all of this was, like, split three ways.
Mm-hmm.
So he was able to go up to these fucking places, like these bars, and just have a roll of fucking cash.
Cha-ching, cha-ching.
And then he would just give it out. And because I do love some whiplash, I keep going back and forth between Dave and Willie and then all of the things and then random side notes. Let's add some more. At this time, like in 1994, there were a lot of murders that included rape and beatings and everything gruesome that you can imagine. They had several suspects, and they had DNA evidence that they checked against the Green River Killer, Gary Leon Ridgway, and Ronald McCauley, which I'm going to dig into him at some point, because he's another interesting one.
I think I've heard that one.
And then once those two were cleared, guess who they checked the DNA against?
Who?
Willie motherfucking Picton. I have zero clue why they zoned in on Willie, but because something was happening, they narrowed in on Willie. He did not match the DNA, so they just, he was done.
Probably because he's always there.
Yeah. I don't know, it's just fucking crazy. So this isn't the first time. It wasn't the first time that he had been at the center of a homicide investigation.
Yeah.
So in 1996, there was a woman. She went by the name Tracy. She recounts an incident that she had with Willie. She says one night Willie had come by, which was odd because he was not a regular of hers. He asked for a blowjob and she said she set the price at $40. They went back to his shitbox little camper and it was disgusting. Like she said, there was no room for anything. Like there was clothes and shit just strewn all over the floor. She went through with it. She got paid. Once they were done and getting dressed, he acted as if he couldn't find his wallet. He grabbed a knife and ended up cutting her shirt. She got out of the camper and began walking away when he did his little switcheroo and became the docile Willie again. He gave her back her wallet and purse and then took her back to the downtown east side.
So do you think she probably, like, said something to him, like, pissed him off, and that's where he switched?
Well, here's the thing. When he was taking her back, he did nothing but talk. Chatterbox. He went on to tell her, as he was taking her back to wherever he picked her up, he really liked to help sex workers get off of drugs and give them a second chance. However, if they failed, if they tried to get clean and they failed, they were nothing and they deserved to die.
That's what he said?
Mm-hmm. Because she didn't use while she was with him, I think that's the only thing that saved her. I honestly think that's the only thing that saved her, because later on, there are other survivors, and they have similar experiences. It's very odd. He ended up not ever going back and stop for her again. She was okay with that, but...
yeah. Fuck yeah.
She also didn't make a report about the incident, because who was gonna believe her? Who was gonna do anything about it? Not the fucking cops around there. They didn't give a fuck.
That's probably not even the worst thing that's ever happened to her.
Definitely not. But she did happen to speak to the women at the, it's like a women's advocacy center or something. They would be open for a few hours every day. And that's where they could get like a hot meal and shower and they could find clothes or whatever. And some medical attention if they need it. But anyway, this woman there, her name was Elaine Allen. She kept a list of bad Johns. I think we referred to it as the do not fuck list.
Yeah.
But even though he was on this list.
Money is money.
Money and drugs. Because he gave it away freely. So, again, whiplash. I talked to you about earlier about how Lisa was his only, like, true friend. Like, she could look at him and say, hey, you stink, go fucking take a bath or whatever. And he would help her with anything that she needed.
Don't tell me she does.
No.
Okay.
No, she lives.
Calf story all over again.
So Dave hated Lisa. Hated her.
Of course, because she was nice to Willie.
Yep.
God forbid.
But she would also tell him how she felt about him.
About Dave?
Yeah.
Good.
And how he was treating his son. So like he would work his son as hard as his mother worked them. And you would think that he wouldn't do that, but he fucking did.
Dave?
Well, yeah, he would do it. But
I was about to say, like,
he experienced it. Why the fuck would you do that? But that's beside the point. Anyway, so there was one night. They were all hanging out or something, and Dave called her a fucking loser. And as she walked by him, he tried to trip her. Instead of letting it slide, like Willie always did. Because again, he was very docile around Dave. Flaccid, if you will. Oh, wee Willie boy. He takes off and charges Dave, pins his ass against the the barn wall. And then he backs up and Dave just slides down the wall and he just laughs hysterically.
Dave laughs? Or Dave. Willie laughs?
Dave. And then from that point, Willie wasn't so flaccid around Dave. He stood up for things. So they kept adding things to this farm, right?
More beds.
Well, more beds. But they had a whole cockfighting ring.
Oh, for sure. I figured.
Yeah. So they had this whole, the whole system worked out. They had some like fucking guard at the entrance. They had some radios. So like if cops or anybody came by that shouldn't be, they'd be like, hey, scatter. And like, everybody fucking run.
Like cops aren't there too. Okay.
Well, this one, I think they said that it was more of the Filipino population there in the area. But they were making a shit ton of money doing that way.
Well, fuck yeah.
And then they decided, hey, what's better than having a cockfighting ring where we get a shit ton of money? Let's get some more money by building this big-ass fucking barn, but turn it into a bar, and let's call it, oh, I don't know, Piggy Palace Good Time Society.
Is that a strip club?
No. No, it's just a straight-up motherfucking bar. And I think a prostitution ring, but that's a whole thing. So he got this idea while he was tearing down, like, a strip mall or something. It had, like, a bar and some other shit. And he would take stuff. Like, so in my head, when I think demolition, I think, like, a big old wrecking ball and, like, it's cleaned up somehow later. No, they took everything. They took the seats that looked like some fucking saddles, apparently.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. But, like, the way they described it was very confusing. And I was like, what the fuck is happening in this place? But anyway, so they took everything they could out of that, and then they supplied literally a barn.
I mean, you're knocking it down anyways, might as well take it.
Yeah. So they created this, and they would have these massive-ass parties, and they even registered it as a non-profit organization for a while. It only lasted for like a year, because they could not keep up with the documentation that was required, because they couldn't fucking prove that they were giving their money to fucking charity.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah. So, fun fact about the Piggy Palace Good Time Society is that off-duty officers and other officials, like city officials, would attend these fucking parties. They would rent out the whole ass place for office parties. And then, like, when like, the wives or whatever would talk about it, like, remember it from so long ago, in the book, it was like, oh, I remember it being a decent place.
Did they actually clean the bar more than they cleaned anything else?
I'm going to go out on a limb and say no.
Do you have to walk through, like, a pigsty to get into the piggy farm?
I don't think so. But the reason it was called Piggy Palace is because Dave was called Piggy.
Yeah.
And so he was like, I'm going to lean into this shit.
I really don't like that it's called a palace.
Yeah, I know. I mean, it was a fucking barn. A shitty-ass barn at that. But anyway, so even though that I've stopped talking about the sex workers' disappearances from the lower tracks, they were still happening. And not all of them were Willie's doing. But it's important to note that there were so many women missing from the strip, and nobody paid attention. So this is unfortunately where I'm going to leave you for part one. And by unfortunately, I mean you're welcome.
Give you a lot to think about.
Just know they're all assholes, and they should have been caught a long time ago, but, you know, whatever.
Oh my god, there's more.
Yeah, there's at least three other parts. It's probably gonna be more like five. It's probably gonna be a five-parter, and I'm so sorry.
Oh my god, Sam.
But listen, the last episode I want, or at least the big portion of the last episode, I want to talk about each of the individuals, each of the women that were his victims.
And how many?
49.
That we know of.
Well, technically, I think there were DNA for 31 women at the farm when they were going through everything. He says they're 49. Which, by the way, there is a video that you can watch of Picton talking to an undercover cop while he is in jail. And he's like, I just wanted to get to the 5-0, the big 50. I think he was aiming to have more than the Green River Killer. But anyway, so that's part one of really picked in, and that was the majority of his life leading up to loads of disappearances.
Yeah. I'm going to need more wine.
Yeah. I have to edit this tomorrow. We're at 2 hours.
Oh my gosh.
If you stuck around this long, I'm sorry. Yeah.
Yes, many apologies.
No, this one wasn't nearly as bad. It's very long, but it's not as bad as the next few are going to be. So if you would like to contact us, tell us about how terrible this case was. Suggest a case or tell us some spooky shit, because I really want some spooky shit. Like, yes. I need some spooky stories soon.
Uplifting stuff.
Yeah. You can find us on all the social media.
Socials.
Facebook, Instagram, and the Twitter.
We have an email.
It's
m3truecrimepod@gmail.com.
I didn't look at you this time.
and I spit it out.
And you did. Good job. I'm so proud of you.
Gold star.
You can find our link tree, and I'll link that in the episode description. And there you can find all of the things that where you can find us, and even the case suggestions.
Oh, and please, like, we don't normally ask this, but give us a rating.
Yeah.
We need some writings, guys. Leave us a review.
Maybe not on this episode. Maybe not. Don't forget, we're going to have the Patreon launching on August 1st. Ooh. And is that it? I feel like there's something else, but this case has legitimately drained me.
Yeah.
Okay, bye!